Welcome back to the final unit of the class Reading and Writing for College Students of the Christian Leaders Institute. This is Sky Pike. You're joining me for a look at rhetoric and rhetorical analysis. These are just further considerations, Unit 12 being further considerations, of things we need to think about when we're writing our papers. And oftentimes when we're reading as well, we want to know that people are being correct in their argumentation. It's another process in which we will use critical thinking skills. So, rhetoric is a term that is broadly used, but it's really the most classical definition of rhetoric is the art of persuasion or the art of effective speaking. Many times it's said that rhetoric is just kind of a way to grab attention, to manipulate audiences, to sneakily win arguments, and to back people into a corner, or it's just a bunch of words that really mean nothing. When I was in graduate school, we would meet on one night of the week at a Christian college professor's place where he and his wife would serve us dinner, this group of Christian graduate students. And one of those graduate students was doing her PhD in rhetoric. And I remember that one time we were talking, I think it was about a political discussion, and people were just saying things like, I'm tired of all the rhetoric that's going around. Meaning all the empty political type words that really mean nothing and just trying to manipulate people and get attention. And she said, got very angry. She said, that is not rhetoric. Rhetoric is the art of effective speaking. I'm doing a whole PhD in rhetoric. So true rhetoric can be either good or bad. It ultimately is trying a means of magnifying your cause, of lifting it up, of effectively speaking of your cause or your idea, of effectively persuading in an unmanipulative way, without manipulation, persuading people of your idea and the goodness of it. So we want you just to remember that when you're doing rhetoric, we're going to teach you a little bit more about what it is here today, that you use your rhetoric skills for good and not for evil. Again, whatever you're doing in word or deed, do all to the glory of Christ Jesus. So, a rhetorical analysis paper, when you're writing an analysis paper, or when you're reading something that you're analyzing in a rhetorical way, your aim is to identify the particular strategies that an author is using to appeal or persuade to be effective to convey his or her message to their audience. The purpose of this analysis in a paper or when you're reading, it has to give an evaluation of how well the author is doing his job or the speaker is doing his or her job. Now, there are three main components to the rhetorical analysis of the situation. There's the writer-speaker component, the one who's doing the talking or writing. You got the audience, the people who are listening or reading, and then you got what's actually being said in the message. A rhetorical analysis paper asks for an identification of these three elements, and it's going to determine how they're intertwining together and how well they're working together. And we're going to talk more about the questions that go into each of these three separate parts of a rhetorical analysis in a couple seconds here. So to begin with, in a rhetorical analysis, we have to ask ourselves some questions. And these are broad questions that we're going to expand upon in the next few slides. But what are the strategies that the author's employing to communicate to his or her message, to his or her audience? Are they using illustrations? Are they using emotional appeals? Are they using anecdotal stories that are able to draw people in to their speech, to connect them with whatever the ideas they're talking about? Is it something even more often pervasive in our society today, where they're just using the physical beauty of a person to draw someone and persuade them that they must be correct? Second thing, what is the effect of these strategies? And can you measure that effect? How can you measure effect? Can that effect be quantified in some way? And are those strategies that this author is using, are they effective and convincing others about whatever they're trying to be convinced about? And how do you know it's effective? How is it being effective? What is the effect? How is it being convinced? In a way, we can think of this idea of rhetoric as a triangle, in which the audience is always thinking about what the message is that the speaker is speaking. So they're concurrently viewing both the speaker, writer, and the message that the speaker, writer is making. On the other hand, you could go to a different side of the triangle, and the message is geared for the audience to understand and written in such a way by the writer, or spoken in such a way that it is understood by the audience. So when you're writing something and then doing a rhetorical analysis on it, you have to keep in view both the audience who's listening or reading, as well as the person who's authoring the message itself. And then finally, if you're looking at it from the angle of the writer-speaker over here, you have to have the writer-speaker is always keeping his own or her his or her message in mind, and also the audience that they're writing to. And how can we analyze how effectively that writer-speaker is getting across the message to the particular audience to which they are speaking or writing? And one of the ways we can start to analyze the situation is by asking these questions. How does the author present himself or herself? Are they presenting themselves as one of the audience that is learning themselves? Are they presenting themselves as an authority? Are they presenting themselves as a messenger of some sort? As a prophet? How do they present themselves? Is the author or the speaker familiar with the subject? How can you tell? I am listening to presentations by my students right now, and at the end, I often get a chance to ask them questions. And when I ask them a question about the paper they're presenting, and they can't tell me something that I know I have read directly in the article, that tells me that they're not being very effective in communicating what the paper says to us as an audience. How does the author show good judgment or a broad perspective? How do you judge that? What are the evidences that what the writer is trying to persuade us of is actually a good thing or a bad thing? Is the author reasonable? How can you tell that they're reasonable in what they're asking for? How does the author treat those who disagree? Are they respectful of them, or are they aggressive toward them? How does the author treat the reader? How do you like it when the author is being derogatory toward you as a reader? There was a class one time that I was in as a graduate student, and the professor was complaining that the students in the class weren't smart enough. And that professor was getting up in front and not knowing what was on her slides. And the students actually, in their evaluations, caused that professor to be dismissed from that class because she was being unfair. She was treating the students unfairly. The same thing can happen for an author with the reader. Do you feel like the author is looking down upon you as a reader? Does the author use stereotypes or show a prejudice in any sort? Where is this published, and what does that say about the work? Think, for instance, if you read an article about the Royals in your local newspaper or on the website of CNN or Fox News, versus if you see that article in the National Enquirer, the tabloid newspaper that we see in the grocery store aisles. Which one are we going to believe? Well, we know, everybody knows that the National Enquirer has a tendency to exaggerate facts. And so we're probably going to take that story with a big, huge grain of salt. Whereas if it's on CNN or Fox News or in the local newspaper, it's more likely to be believed because that source is a believable source and reliable. What did you expect to see when that was not on the page? Was there something more they should have said that they never covered? And how does that work? Does that work for or against the message? If it's discovered, does it work for or against the writer or speaker? If it's not discovered, does it work for or against the writer or speaker? What does the work look like? Is it neat? Does it flow well? Does it use the page well? Does the font look correct? You don't want some party-looking font on a formal paper. That just looks out of place. Is there too little white spaces on the page? Is there too much white space on the page? And is there relations between the different parts of the text that the writer is writing? So you can start to see already we're getting some ideas of critical thinking in here. How about the audience? My professor used to say, three things you have to remember about writing: audience, audience, and audience. What's the audience like? What are the characteristics of the audience? How can you tell this? If you don't know, don't assume that you know. But consider, is the audience a certain race, a certain culture, a different age, or are they a primarily male or female audience? Are they physical characteristics? Maybe you're talking to a group of disabled people. Maybe you're talking to a group of athletes. Habits. Maybe you're talking to people that are drug users. Or maybe you're talking to people that are compulsively clean or compulsively messy. What is their economic and educational level? These are going to inform you. You're going to write to a person, a typical person, in an uneducated person, differently than you're going to write to a highly educated one. What's their religious educational level? Are they part of religion? What religion is it? What do they know about the religion? Are they people that are expert, or are they people that are more novice? What's their ethnicity, citizenship? Where are they from? How we read a writing may be different than how the people in India read something. Is the reader and audience encouraged to have an emotional response to this writing? How can you tell? And why or why not don't they have this emotional response? Emotions are one of the most powerful things that will pull us into something. And so many people that use rhetoric in a bad way are going to use emotional appeals instead of a truthful message to persuade people. Unfortunately, that's often what we see in preaching today. We see pastors saying, come to Christ and he will make you this or that. We see it in songs we sing when the songs are about I. Well, should the songs be mostly about I or mostly about Christ when we worship? These are things that we need to think about when we're considering the audience. Is the reader encouraged to examine or question opposition motives? What does the opposition say? Why would it say it? How do you think about that? Does the reader, what values, what needs, what beliefs are presented here that the reader has that you need to take into consideration when you're looking from the audience? How can you tell? Is there a pattern to word choice or other word choice? You're, again, in the audience, you're critically thinking, whether you're the reader or the listener, you're critically thinking. Is the language simple or complex? Are the terms defined well or not? A person can use a lot of to be persuasive, can use a lot of highfalutin $5 words, but those $5 words, if they're void of meaning or they're void of a good message, mean nothing. In fact, can be detrimental. What is the style of this work? How is the style created? Does the style of this piece resemble that of other works? How many times you've heard someone talk about a piece of music and say, oh, that sounds like Handel or that sounds like Beethoven? Because you can hear the individual repetition of how a Beethoven sounds or how Handel sounds or how Bach sounds. There is also the idea of the same thing in biblical analysis. People can read the books of Paul and say, this is Pauline in the way that they write. This is books of John. This is Johannian in the way that they write. So how does the style of the writer affect the audience? Consider imagery, coherence, emphasis, repetition, the rhythm, analogies used, metaphors, similes. What are metaphors? Metaphors are the comparison of one thing to another thing using the word like or as. Similes are the same. They just eliminate the like or as. How about the message or the text? What do we need to consider when we're doing this analysis, this rhetorical analysis? Well, how is the work organized? And what are the indicators of this organization? What in the text proves that there's organization to it? What in the text brings out the organization to that? Or when you're listening, I remember I had a history class with everybody in my college years said never wanted to have this professor because he was so hard. But when I listened to his lectures, they were so easy to outline because he was able to emphasize where each point came from and where each subpoint was. And so for me, it was a fairly easy thing to do. And I think with others, it would take practice, but he had a way of speaking that you could hear his organization and the way he spoke. Does the organization work? The process, the narration of it, how it proceeds from one thing to the next, where it compares and contrasts different objects or people or ideas, how it classifies and divides things, the cause and effect or definition, description. Those things we talked about when we were talking about writing and when we were talking about reading, that a critical thinker has to do. What claims are being made? And are these claims strong and obvious? Are they substantiated? Or are they unsubstantiated? Is it purely an emotional or an appeal based on some claim other than the truth? What evidence is used to support the claims? There's examples, illustrations, facts and statistics, precedents and laws, memories and records, expert or witness testimony. Any of these things can be claims used as support and evidence to support the claims that someone's making. We've often used these as the peripheral ideas compared to the primary and secondary ideas. So we can see primary ideas here, secondary ideas with the evidence, and then the peripheral ideas and the types of evidence that's listed. And how does the work look? Is it neat and sloppy? Is the layout good? Font and size seem appropriate? And do visual aids add to those effects? Do the graphics, to the tables, do the pictures, whatever the other things that are more for a graphical look, are they adding to the overall effect and effectively and persuasively getting the message across? And finally, you need to ask, was this work good or bad? Why? And why? And what are the criteria in which you are saying something is good or something is bad? My brother and his wife came yesterday to our church. It's a Lutheran church. They're Baptist. And in the Lutheran service, the pastor does an absolution of sins. Now they use the verse that whosoever sins you forgive on earth, they will be forgiven in heaven. And whosoever sins you forgive in heaven will be forgiven on earth, in the Gospel of John. And that brought a discussion of, was that good or was it bad? And what was the basis upon which we determined whether it was good or bad? Ultimately, it became a discussion about how the doctrine was seen. The doctrine of salvation being that we are delivered through Christ's blood from our sinful nature. And then that forgiveness is then only for the sins that we would do during the week. And that forgiveness is really only a reminder that it is Christ that forgives truly, but that it is what we do forgive as a Christians on earth can be forgiven by the Father as well. And there's different ways to view that little particular, and I don't want to get into the whys and wherefores of that, but it's always good to ask yourself, is something good or is it bad? And why is it good or why is it bad? What is the criteria that we are measuring good or bad by? How do you defend your opinion, your claim, your comment, or evaluation? You as the analyst, doing a rhetorical analyst, or how does the author defend their opinion, claim, comment, or evaluation? So these are all things that are important in critical rhetorical analysis, which rhetorical analysis is really a type of critical thinking. Thus the reason why my friend could get a PhD in rhetorical analysis, because it is really a art, is a science of analyzing literature and speeches as to their goodness or to their not so goodness. So now that we've got the introduction to rhetorical analysis down, let us consider when we read, when we write, when we listen to speeches or lectures, let us do an analysis thinking about the speaker or writer, the message, and then the audience as well. When we do this, we become rhetorical. We begin the ideas and the process of rhetorical analysis. So thank you for joining me this time. We will see you soon. God bless and take care.